Indians camp near here? Or?
Yeah, there's three different camps around here. There's one that used to be called the Beechtree Landing. That is up the river a little from Sanford. It's underwater now. It's under the lake there. That is just a small camp. And then there was one up towards North Bradley, putting it halfway to North Bradley. It's called used to be called a nigger farm. I guess some nigger family owned it one time. Small camp there, but out here, right out the bend of the road here with this Church of God, there was 90 tents of Indians.
All the time.
They always camped close to the water, you know, some stream, so you could have water.
What year was that?
And there was 90 tents there.
What year?
Well, I don't know, you can kind of figure that out yourself now. It's been about 75 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, what did these tents look like? Did they
They used common tents, like, but the, of course they used to where they lived all the time. They had their what they called wigwams, you know, and
I see.
A hole up through the top for the smoke and stuff to go up through, like that. But this was some different kind of a tent than that. But there were 90 tents out there, anywhere from 4 or 5 to maybe 10 people in a tent. And there was a big store down Sanford, the big general store. It used to belong to a lumber company. And then changed hands after a while. Different ones owned it, and I believe it was Lane Brothers was in there at that time. And they started paying 5 cents a quart for huckleberries, see? Well, when the market began to get supplied a little bit, well, they dropped the price to 3 cents a quart. And you know that a good beer picker could make more than a first-class carpenter.
Is that right?
At that, even the 3 cents a quart. A carpenter couldn't make over about a dollar and a half in 10 hours them days.
Well, these must have been pretty extensive huckleberry.
Oh, it's huckleberry marshes all around here. And it is mostly all state land. They could go where they please, mostly. So they bought at that one store, they bought and shipped out over 2,300 bushels of huckleberries. And then there was another smaller store over there that probably shipped out 400 or 500 bushels too. The greatest huckleberry crop I've ever known around here.
Well, they probably had, probably 300 or 400 Indians then out of that camp there.
Yeah, there are a lot of them. And
how long would they stay?
Well, it wouldn't be very long, you know. They don't last long. They usually start picking around. Well, we used to figure we'd get maybe enough for a huckleberry pie for the 4th of July. Well, then by August, it'd be just about, 1st of August, be just about gone. So they didn't last long. But there was an awful lot of huckleberries, and they used to, of course, the roads was all just sand roads here, but they'd walk down here, down the road, and going out in here, there's lots of huckleberry marshes in here. My folks had 15 swarms of bees, or hives of bees, and they liked honey, you know. They'd stop there and buy honey off of them. And the chief of that tribe over there was probably 18 or 19 years old. A nice-looking Indian, about the age of my brother, that is a couple of years older than me, and So we got acquainted with him, and we chummed around together, chief. We had quite a lot of fun. We had a little muzzle-loading rifle, and we used to take him along with us and go out in the woods around and shoot squirrels and whatever we could see. We had quite a little fun there. Oh, he was a nice young fellow. You know, he, no matter how young you are, if you're in line to be chief, and are the chief, you're the boss of the tribe. You got to do as you tell them. We had my oldest brother had a birthday come up, and they put on a, we lived at that time just 80 rods down the road here, where it's called now the, well, you call it Johnson Place, or the, I can't think of the name now, or a place on the west side of the road right over here. He died a short time ago. Well, we had a dance there anyway, and invited everybody. And there were several of them Indians came. And you know, when they got a drink or two fire water, what the first thing they want to do is pick a quarrel with somebody. So there was a couple of them got into a scrap there, but that little chief, you know, he just broke them up. They had to mind him. Yeah. He's the boss.
Did they have guns too, or the Indians that were here?
Well, they might have had a few. I never knew them to use any. Yeah. But I guess it was still pretty much bow and arrow and tomahawk. I suppose some of them had guns. But that is the greatest, well, besides all them berries that was brought over here, from places around where there wasn't huckleberries, people would come with team horses on a wagon and come right into the marsh and buy wagon loads of them. That was the greatest huckleberry crop I've ever known. Well,
and what made them leave?
Huh?
What made them leave the area?
The Indians? Well, I don't know, but there's just that Indian reservation up this side of Mount Pleasant. Mm-hmm. Been there for a long time. Why they ever got settled there, I don't know. But that's there. Oh, there was a few up around Coleman, came down here. But it's mostly that just up beside of Mount Pleasant Indian Reservation there.
What was the first job you ever held?
First job I ever held? Well, I guess about the first one was over here at Sanford for Libby McNeil and Libby Cucumber Factory in Grand Rapids. They built a big salting station over here. I think that's about the first job I ever had. One summer I worked in there. They had, in the spring, they'd filled up a lot of big over there the fall, the year before, and had them in salt water all winter, you see, and then in the spring they had to load them out in cars and ship them over Grand Rapids. So I helped, I started in there and helped load out what they had, and then worked there all summer, taking in pickles. And then the elevator. I used to work the grain elevator over here. As I've told a few years ago, I was on television from a couple of guys came up from Flint, brought up a movie camera along, and they wanted to talk with somebody about what kind of country this was 60 or more years ago compared with just this is 4 or 5 years ago. So some of the guys over town told him, well, get a hold of Len Reed. He probably can tell you more than anybody else because he's one of the oldest down here. So they got me, and they took me over there to Dancer's dry goods store and went into the living room and set up their movie there. But it was on that Michigan Today program that only lasts 10-15 minutes, you know. And I didn't have time to tell them very much at all. But I did tell them that the Sanford, 60 or more years ago, was a busier town. They'd done more business right in Sanford 60 or more years ago than they do now. But it's a different kind of business. See, there was no car or nothing like that. No garages, but there was 2 hotels, livery stables, there was lumber mills, shingle mill, cucumber pickle salting station, a big grain elevator. And I worked there a lot, too. And on top of that, they bought all kinds of wood products. Shingle bolts, pail bolts, lath bolts, wagon and buggy wheel hub poles, hook poles, railroad ties, all such stuff as that. It's been a big business.
What was the Sanford House?
Where was the Sanford House?
What was that? That was a hotel? Was that a...
No, it was the old Sanford home. That was just a little log shanty that old Charles Sanford, when he came up in a rowboat up the river. That was 100 years ago in 1970. That's my centennial hat there. Mm-hmm. 1970, it is 100 years ago that he came up here and he put up a little log shanty over there. The first building in Sanford. Yeah, and that's it. Just several years ago, while I used to live in Saginaw, I lived down there for quite a long while. And while I was down there, they had moved it from Sanford out here. It's 3/4 miles out here now, that old house, but you wouldn't know it because it's all been finished off and looks like a modern home. But it's way out here, 3/4 mile. The old Charles Sanford. Yeah?
Did you say you were a logger at one time?
Me? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to work on Drummond's Island. Worked up there 3 winters and 2 summers, in the woods in the winter and in the sawmill in summer. Yeah. Worked up there 3 winters and 2 summers.
What did the logger do? I mean, how did you go about it?
You had to go out in the woods, and there was 2 men to saw the logs, saw the trees down, and saw them up. And one winter, for a while, I worked as a fitter, getting ready. I'd go and see if there was any brush around there. I'd have to clean that out, and then if I wanted to fall a tree that way, I'd notch the tree on that side of my axe, you see, and they'd saw on this side, and that'd make the tree fall that way, unless it was leaning heavy this way, of course. And that was called a fitter, you see. I was doing that. And then, of course, they had one horse would haul the logs out the woods, trail on out to a skidway, then load them onto sleighs there and haul them down to the lake. I worked at that. The last time I was up there, I top-loaded logs on the sleighs. Bunks were 14 feet wide on the big sleighs. I had to be on top of that with my canhook. It was loaded with a decking line, you know, going right over the load, right over the top of the load. Team on the other side to pull and roll the logs up skids. That's the way they load them. There's a man at each end of them to keep it going up there straight. And when I got up there just right, I had to be there with my cant hook and catch the log just right and across the chain that way with my hook so that I could get the hook and feed it back down for the next log. That's the way I worked it. Yeah. I worked up there that last summer. The last summer I was up there, worked at that, top loading logs. Or last winter, rather. And then they quit lumbering.
What was it like living in a lumber camp up there?
The what?
What was it like living in a lumber camp? What kind of food did you eat and things like that? Where'd you sleep?
Well, in what they used to call bunks. They built right up against the wall. They built one bunk here, and then up above here would be another bunk over the top. Just probably put a lot of straw or even leaves or something like that in there in place of a tick, you know. No springs. But that's the way we slept. But they usually had pretty good food, good cook and plenty of it. Plenty of food. But the one thing about it, we didn't get very much washing done. You know, it is a common thing for a man in a lumber camp to have body lice, head lice, and maybe crabs all at once.
I imagine.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. It's a common thing, because sometimes the people would put on underclothes and they might not change that thing all winter. No, sir. I've known of people putting on a suit of underclothes and wear it all winter. And they'd wear it until there wasn't much left. A little ring around the neck or something like that. Yeah. Oh, but we got so we slept good in the bunks, you know, as long as they had the right temperature, plenty of wood for the old stove. And, of course, they had lots of games they played. Some of them played cards, some of them played head in the hat. You know how that's played?
No.
Well, like this now, if I was sitting on one of them bunks there, I'd have a hat or something down here, you know, and the crew around there would, one of them would have to get his head down in that hat, see, that's head in the hat, and somebody with a paddle, they'd had a paddle there to give him a clip on the bottom, and if he could guess, he had to guess which one it was that done it, and if he guessed wrong, he had to stay there and take another one. If he guessed right, then that guy would ask to get down his head in the hat, take his paddle. So that was head in the hat. But they used to wrestle in the box and have lots of fun there. Have violin, maybe, and banjo and stuff like that. Lots of music.
Did you do this almost every night, or was it for the weekends and stuff like
that?
Oh,
every night. Sure, we lived right there. Right in that is our home, where we were in the lumber woods. Yeah. And then they was fighting, of course. Always more or less fighting in the camp. They always had somebody that was a tough guy. He would be the head of the bunch. He would be the master of the whole bunch. Then they always had somebody that was like myself, kind of dumb, that they could pick on. They could always pick on him, play tricks on him. And that's what they always had in the lumber camp. So they'd sometime get in a scrap. If there was a new man came into the camp to work, and he looked like a pretty good fighter, why, this bully, they called him, would have to try him out some way. Yeah. I used to have, years ago up around here, they used to have a fellow by the name of Silver Jack. His name was Jack Driscoll, but he was a Swede, and he had silver-colored hair, so they called him Silver Jack. And he was just the bully of the whole country. And wherever he went, he was the boss. One time, he was a stranger at Edenville at that time, but he was walking across country looking for a job in some camp, and he stopped into Edenville. That was called at that time Camp 16. And old Tom Moore had a hotel there in bar room, and he was a fighter too. And this guy stopped in there. Old Tom was all alone. He stepped up to the bar and he bought himself and old Tom Moore a drink of liquor. Then maybe another one. Old Tom Moore liked to fight, you see, and he's a pretty good man. So he played a trick on this old Jack Driscoll, Silver Jack. He said, "I got something I want to show you out here in the back room." So they went out there in the back room. When they got in there, my old Tom locked the door. He says, "Now I'm going to show you what I told you I wanted to show you," like. And he pitched onto this Jack. Well, it wasn't but just a short time until old Tom Moore was on the floor and old Jack was hammering. And Tom was hollering bloody murder. "Help, help, help!" There happened to be two or three of the guys, and that is a tough town, Edenville, or Camp 16 was at that time. It was about next to Tombstone, Arizona. Only out there they fought with guns, mostly, and up here there's corks and stuff like that. Cork boots and beer bottles and everything else like that. Tooth and nail. But this old Tom was hollering for help, and so there were two or three guys going by, and they walked in there, and they had to break that door in before they get in there and pull old Driscoll off. And when Tom got up, well, he says, "Well, I found out that I wasn't good enough for you." My old Jack says, "Let me tell you something." He says, "If these guys hadn't come along and broke in here and pulled me off you, I'd have hammered you to your to the last. to you hollered good. So don't ever try that on anybody again." But finally, old Jack Driscoll was down here to Gonzaga one time, and he met a train conductor, and they got in a fight down there. But Jack was getting older, see, and slowing up a little bit. And they fought there on the street, and the cops stood to one side, peeked around the corner at them, and let them fight it out. And they fought there, and the first one was down, and then the other, and finally, they called it a draw. So Jack said after that, I can't fight no more. He says, when I can't lick the other guy, I'm through. So he never fought again. But how that, this is another thing about that, why that's Edenville now up there. It used to be Camp 16, as I said. There was some man going through there one time, and he stayed overnight. It was in the summertime, stayed overnight at old Tom Morris Hotel. And in the evening, he took a walk down along the riverbank there. And you know the Tobacco River comes in there from one way, and the Cedar River. And it is beautiful down there that evening, nice moonlight, beautiful. Went back up to the hotel. He called it, he said it was just as nice as the Garden of Eden. Beautiful place, just like in Eden. And right there, they named it Edenville. Wow. That's why it's been Edenville ever since. Yeah. But that was a tough town up there. That was, as I say, they always had to fight. There was tough men up there. But it was tooth and nail and cork boots and stuff like that.
They had more saloons than churches, didn't they? Up there?
Oh, yes. Well, April down here, that used to be Red Cag, you know, years ago. There were seven saloons and hotels in that little town one time, in the lumbering days. When Wright and Ketchum was lumber company, and they lumbered up around towards Hope up in there, and they built a little narrow gauge railroad that went right up from Avril towards Hope up in there. I've been right up that long ago. And they brought their logs down to the river bank there and rolled them into the river. Right in this to the left here. Where are you going? Oh. Yeah, there were seven bars and hotels down there in April. That was a Red Keg, then they had a beer keg painted red and sitting on top of the depot. Then afterwards, after the lumbering was done there, Wright and Ketchum, they called them Ketchum and Skinnum. But there was an old man by the name of Avril, the first settler down in there. And they changed it to Avril. But that was the biggest banking ground in the world. Pine logs. They lumbered up towards the open around there, brought them down and rolled them into the river there. At one time they had what they called 26 million feet of pine logs in that river. Biggest banking ground in the world. There used to be a picture of it down Midland in the courthouse. Well, I think now it's probably out to the museum out just out of Eastman Road. Not Eastman, but